Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CracksSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CracksSidewalks.com. Once again, here ready to talk Marquette basketball. Easy week. On a week the most teams were playing their holiday tournaments. Marquette already had theirs out of the way, so just played one game. Phil, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Pretty solid, other than the usual toddler problems. It was good. It was nice to watch other teams play and kind of relax over the Thanksgiving week. So, you know, it was good. How about you?
It was good. I had a great Thanksgiving, and then Saturday, I spent most of Saturday stuck in a parking garage waiting for someone to come help me jumpstart my car. But other than that, it was great.
This is the apocalypse.
Yeah. So yeah, I've had better Saturdays, that's for sure. But other than that, yeah, you know, because of that, I didn't get to actually watch the Marquette game live. I actually watched it on because I had it recorded, so I watched it after the fact on Sunday, but I knew what happened. I wasn't going to go in the old, what you and I call the cone of silence for the game.
Right.
It's kind of a running joke you and I have had since college, really, is when one of us is trying to not know what's going on in a sporting event. Really dating ourselves with this reference, but going in the cone of silence. just don't tell, you know. Of course, the cone of silence has gotten much more difficult as years have gone by with text messages and turning off alerts on, you know, to Twitter, Facebook. But the funny thing I've always loved about the cone of silence, Phil, is how you and I, what do you call it, like the nuclear option when, like,
yes.
We need to know. Yes. So basically, the agreement is, this was especially true for DePaul games over the last few years, was when one of us is in the cone of silence, which basically we would always tell each other this, was basically say, don't text me during the game.
Right. Don't tweet at me, don't text me, whatever.
Yeah, do not, like, leave me alone, which, cool, but the nuclear option is if the game is so unbearable that you know the other person would not want to stay up late watching this, you exercise the nuclear option and say, don't watch. We did that a few times over the last few years.
Like, yes, the Wojo era earned the most nuclear warnings.
the just do not watch this. You do not want to be, you know, staying up late while the wife and kids are in bed, trying to be quiet, trying to watch this game, because it's just going to make your night even more miserable, and you will wonder why you were up at 1 a.m. watching this game. But no, got sidetracked there. But no, I did not do the whole cone of silence. I was keeping track of the game on my phone. An easy win, as we kind of hoped for, Phil. You know, the game was never really in doubt, was it? I mean,
no, not really.
There were some times where maybe the starters struggled a bit here and there, but like watching the game again on delay, knowing what was going to happen, still never really seemed like there was a moment in that game where there was any doubt that Marquette was going to win.
No, I think it was, I mean, there were a couple of times, in fact, where you thought there were moments that Marquette could really blow it open, right? Like, that was the type of game, I don't know that should's the right word, but certainly could have, instead of winning by 14, they could have won by 25, 26, something like that, which, you know, probably matters in an algorithm somewhere. But, you know, it was interesting where I was in different seats this game than I usually am. And was kind of close to where, you know, Shaka was doing most of his coaching. And it was kind of interesting to watch him coach in this game, because he was very animated. I don't know that emotional is the right word, but was very, you know, was very enthusiastic when necessary. Was also very conveyed dismay at some of the decisions made. Right. So, like, I think. You know, Shaka viewed this as a, you know, this is a game where we gotta work on the fundamentals and really work on the details, right? And even, what was it, 3 minutes into the game, he went with a full line change and was just like, yeah, starter's out, you're not doing it. We're putting in the, you know, we're putting in the scrambled eggs or the second team or whatever you want to call it.
And we're gonna call them scrambled eggs, god dang it.
Yeah, it's the scrambled eggs. So he put the scrambled eggs in and put some more energy in and stuff like that. So it was, I think it was a very like one, you're obviously, you should win and win comfortably, but it was very much a teaching game that I think, or I'm guessing that Shaka had the team doing some laps the next day, probably.
Yeah, I think he knows that, you know, after a week off, he wanted to make sure that they kind of picked up where they left off for the most part. Great, I guess where they left off was technically a loss, but the previous week was so good. Like, they didn't want anything to, like, slip away while they had a week where they didn't have any games. And he knows there's a very important part of the schedule coming up because I think, as we said on the last podcast, but while I'm not ready to shift expectations to say that this team should make the tournament, I think it's definitely fine for this team to be thinking, we can get there.
Right.
And start thinking, like, we got to, let's get right and get some wins and get a non-conference resume that's going to make us tournament worthy. And yeah, you want to get some, clean some things up, get some things right, because obviously the Wisconsin Badgers are coming up later this week. We're definitely going to talk about them in a few minutes. That's probably going to be the bulk of the podcast today, actually, is talking about the matchup with the Badgers. But I just want to touch on the previous bye game and the upcoming bye game. But it's an important stretch because you got Wisconsin, Kansas State, and then a couple weeks UCLA. Those are opportunities to get good to great wins that would mean a lot come Selection Sunday if we get to a point where Marquette is seriously thought of as a tournament team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and Shaka, even in the post-game radio show, made the point of saying, you know, and it didn't come across as an excuse necessarily, but he recognized the reality of, hey, these guys played, you know, essentially six games in 12 days, and then, had a couple of days off that mandated by NCAA rules, and then had Thanksgiving, which they actually practiced on Thanksgiving, he said, which I guess makes some sense. So it was a bit of a weird week for them. They're coming off the emotion and the exertion of the Charleston Classic. You know, it's a team that they should beat, right? Like, so it's tough to get up and get ready and enthusiastic for that. But again, I think it was a moment to, like, hey, do what you need to do, get your mind right, let's work on some things, let's get comfortable. And I think they accomplished that. Sure, they could have won by more. They could have been a little less sloppy, especially on turnovers, right? A bit of the Wojo turnovers syndrome there. But it was a fine game. It was all right. So there's all sorts of reasons to say, yeah, it wasn't that great a game, but, you know, it's to be expected. Move on and look a lot sharper in the bye game on Tuesday, because that silly red menace is looming out there.
Mm-hmm. I saw Ben Steele tweet out an article, and I think Paint Touches had a tweet thread about possible changes to the starting lineup coming, at least maybe Shaka considering. Maybe, yeah, he didn't say he's definitely changing anything, but said it's something maybe he would consider. And the fact that he had a line change 3 minutes into this game maybe tells you it's something he's kicking around.
Yeah, I think so. I think it probably makes sense to do some sort of lineup change, because the lineup as it currently is, you know, if you think about even the games they won, right, the starters more often than not ended up down, you know, 5-6 points in the first 4 or 5 minutes, right? Against Illinois it happened, against against Virginia it happened, right? Certainly got down against St. Bonaventure. So maybe some starting lineup, you know, turnover is necessary. Get guys that are practicing well and are showing the enthusiasm. I don't know. Who do you think enters the starting or leaves the starting lineup in a...
Yeah, see, that's the tough thing to consider, because, you know, I obviously, you're not moving Daryl Morcell out of the starting lineup.
No.
You're not moving Justin Lewis out of the starting lineup. And Kirkweth has been excellent, especially defensively, so you're not moving him. So you're kind of down to just a couple, really. And I guess, you know, Kolick has been good. I think his scoring numbers and his shooting numbers aren't quite what you would hope they would be just yet. But I don't think he's a guy that needs to be benched, because I love his energy, and I like his leadership and his ball handling. It has all been better than I expected, I think.
Right.
So that just by process of elimination leads you to a wonderful Omax might be a guy who might be better coming off the bench as a defensive rebounding guy. But I can get why you stick with Omax, is because you want that size. This Marquette still is not a great rebounding team, and I don't know how much smaller you want to get if you take Omax out of there, who's 6'8", and get more Cam Jones, who's 6'4", or more Stevie Mitchell, who's 6'2". How small do you want to get? You're not going to play Oso and Kerr together. Those guys are going to go. I don't think they've played together once this year.
No, they have not. Nor would you.
I don't see any reason why you would. Those are guys who sub for each other. So I just guess by process, if you're going to look at a change, and it's not saying I don't want Omax to play, because I do like his size, and you see the potential there, and you see what Shaka sees in him. But Cam Jones has been great shooting the ball for the most part, coming off the bench. Still waiting for Greg Elliott to kind of show a little more, because we've seen him do pretty good things in the past. Hasn't quite gotten there yet. I love what I've seen from Stevie Mitchell, but how much is Stevie going to play with Kolek, or Stevie with Morcell and Cam Jones? I love Mitchell as the kind of that first guard off the bench sometimes, especially maybe what he brings on defense. And I think he's just got great instincts and leadership, and I think he's going to be a great Big East player over the next few years. So I guess to answer your question, I guess maybe more of Cam Jones, maybe more Stevie Mitchell, but I could see why you want to stick with Omax, just for the size, and hopefully he can, you're not going to get killed too much on rebounding.
Yeah, I think Omax is probably the one, just simply because from an offensive standpoint, like, it's the most obvious thing that is not working the best, right, on the offensive end, and the defensive end, while problematic at times, has been certainly adequate, and it's the offense that really at some point needs to get more consistent and start going. I would speculate that maybe they start to. And again, I don't know whether it's starters' minutes or being literally named the starter, right? Like there's all sorts of things around that. But I would leave it at this. I would expect actually David Joplin, especially in this last game, right? Like he really played with energy, played pretty good on both ends, right? Like I think we may start to see him get more minutes potentially at the expense of Omax. And I also think it's going to be a little bit of like the hot hand, right? You mentioned Cam Jones, Stevie Mitchell, and Tyler Kolek. I think those three guys in some way, shape, or form are going to be, it's going to be kind of two out of the three of those guys are getting the bulk of the minutes. But it's all going to depend on what's going on in that specific game or matchup or who's the hot hand, right?
Yeah, I think so, and I guess that's the benefit of when you've got kind of 10 guys in your rotation, who play a lot. Maybe you have options you keep subbing guys in until somebody gives you a spark and say, all right, well, this is working, and it. A different guy every night. Maybe one night it's a Cam Jones game, another night it's a David Joplin game, and we've had some games where it's a Daryl Morcell game. Kirkweth has had his moments. So I think your point about it's going to go with the hot hand a lot is probably true. I think we're all still learning a lot, including Shaka, about this young team and what works, what doesn't, and the tough thing is it's probably not going to be the same answer every night, right? As much as the speculation may be about Omax playing less, he could just as easily come out and give you, 15-8 in the next game. Like, oh, okay, well, that worked.
Right.
That was great.
Right. Well, I think at the end of the day, really, depending on the opponent, right, and it may change, but the only givens are Daryl, Justin, and then some combination of Kirkquath and Oso Ighodaro, right? And that's just, from a center position standpoint, those two guys are the only ones on the rosters, and they're both playing in the minutes they're getting. They're both playing well. So those guys, plus Daryl Morcell and Justin Lewis, those guys are going to get the starter minutes, and they're going to get, you know, more than likely the start off the bench, right? Or start the game. I think everything else is probably subject to what's going on in practice, what the matchups are in the particular team, right? And, you know, and I think this is the thing that's tantalizing, right? Like you said, we shouldn't be adjusting our expectations for the team, but the ceiling is certainly going up. And when you think about Tyler Kolek probably hasn't played to his full potential, Greg Elliott hasn't, as you mentioned, you know, Omax seems like, hey, if it's going to happen, it's got to happen at some point for him, right? Like, so there's potential for even more breakout from the folks we have. And if that happens, then the offense could really take off, which makes the defense that more deadly, right? Because one of the big things is for this pressure defense to be at its peak efficiency, you got to make buckets, right? The other team has to be taking the ball out from under their basket as much as possible so you can set up that pressure. And we saw it in the game against Northern Illinois. When they miss shots and give up rebounds, the other team more often than not is on the break, and then that kind of defeats the whole defensive stratagem, so to speak. So corralling or at least slowing down rebounds and making buckets so you can set up your defenses are critical to this team. And so whatever you can do to maximize the offensive potential, I think is probably a direction Shaka goes.
Yeah. You have to be able to set up the violence.
Right. And
there is no violence without offense.
Right. It's just wild violence as opposed to purposeful violence.
Yes. Controlled violence is what we're going for here.
Correct.
Planned.
Absolutely.
And controlled violence. Hey, so all right, so they got Marquette got one win over the past week against Northern Illinois. Now it's on to Jackson State, a team that's ranked similarly in KenPom. Just a few quick notes about Jackson State, then we'll move on to the main event of the week against Wisconsin. But Jackson State, as SWAC teams go, is a pretty good SWAC team. They went undefeated in the league last year before losing in the conference tournament. Just a victim of what those small conferences tend to do. You know, they love to play those conference tournaments like everybody else, but it doesn't always mean your best team's going to represent you in the tournament. That's kind of what happened to them last year. They were 11-0 in the SWAC last year, and then got knocked out and didn't go to the tournament. The guy you're going to want to watch out for Jackson State is Javius McInnes. He is the returning SWAC Defensive Player of the Year. You look at his KenPom numbers, his block percentage, his defensive rebounding percentage, both really, really good. So if there's one guy who's going to give Marquette fits, it's probably him, at least defensively. Offensively, there may not be a whole lot to get too worried about. They're not a great shooting team. They're effective. Their offensive efficiency is one of the worst in the NCAA. They don't shoot the ball well. They turn it over. Bottom line, Phil, KenPom has this as a 16-point spread, so similar to Northern Illinois, this should be an easy win. But again, if you're looking for a guy to watch out for, a guy who may make an impact and frustrate Marquette a little bit, it's going to be McInnes in the middle.
Yeah, I think it's all the same things, right? We're looking for energy, defense feeding the offense, right?
And maybe if you're going to try out somebody else in the starting lineup, some different rotations,
yeah,
maybe this is a game you kick it around before you head to Madison. And maybe you don't want to experiment in Madison. Maybe you want to make sure you know what a rotation you're comfortable with.
Right, right. And at least get everyone to feel comfortable with their role on the team or what the new role on the team is going to be, and you don't spring that, and maybe they don't make any changes, but to your point near the beginning, you know, if you're going to make a change, now is the time, because unless something goes catastrophically wrong, right, you're not going to make the change. You got Wisconsin, Kansas State, UCLA, Xavier, Connecticut, right? Like that, you got to five KenPom top 50 teams or five top 75 teams in the span of like 16 days. Like you're not gonna roll the dice there.
Yeah, like, I mean, not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but how many games do you think Marquette wins in December? because you got, I mean, KenPom has Marquette going 0 for December because you've got Wisconsin on the road, Kansas State on the road, UCLA at home, Xavier on the road, Connecticut at home, at St. John's, and that's December. Creighton is the next game. That's January 1st. But Marquette, KenPom has Marquette losing all of those games. I hope it's not 0 for December, but that's kind of what Shock is bracing for right now. Is like, let's get some things right before we get into December, because that is going to be a brutal month.
Right. Well, and that's why we say, like, you don't adjust expectations, right? Like, this team is, it could very well go 0 for 6 in December.
Yeah, 0 for 6. Yep.
And, you know, yeah, you're not going to feel great losing six in a row, but also it's kind of not unexpected either, right?
Right.
And that's why the, you know, the Charleston Classic and the Illinois game were so important, because you kind of banked some wins you weren't expecting. That helps you. Now, you know, I think it's likely that they can win at least one game in December, right? So the dice will fall their way, you know, some way or another. This team has talent. So maybe they can win one in December. But, I mean, we should all be prepared for a cold and brutal December here for Marquette basketball.
Winter is coming.
Yes.
But yeah, basically, I echo your sentiment. Let's not hit the panic button if we, you know, look up and Marquette goes from, say, 7-1 to 7-7 really quickly. You know, it would be, like I said, you know, I'm not saying you have to like it. I'm just saying don't be stunned and wonder what the hell's going on. We're right. Telling you what the hell's going on. They're playing good teams.
Right. Really good teams. You know, I mean, UCLA is a top 10 team, obviously, and Connecticut is a top 20 team, and well, Wisconsin is apparently a top 40 KenPom team. I mean, how does this happen?
KenPom
every
has
year?
Always been very kind to Wisconsin. Yes. I think it does have a soft spot for teams that play slower, and I'm sure, you know, the counter to that is, you know, KenPom would say, well, that's because teams that play slower, they take care of the ball more and they get the most out of their possessions and make you work harder on defense, and that leads to better numbers and that leads to better efficiency, and that's why they're favored. So I understand, but like, seems like even when, like, you think Wisconsin or maybe even Virginia is not that good, their KenPom numbers are always great. They're always really, like, way up there. And yeah, Wisconsin enters this week 32 in KenPom. KenPom has this as a 9-point spread. Now, I'm not saying Marquette's going to win, but I would take your Golden Eagles plus 9 if that's what the line in Vegas ends up being.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Like, yeah. I mean, we've seen this with the exception of the St. Bonaventure game. Like, Marquette can come back from every, you know, just about every deficit level. And it's not like Wisconsin's going to score in droves, right? I mean, it's going to be a very, like, jarring conflict of styles and approaches. But there's nothing that tells me that Marquette loses by, hell, more than 6, right? Like, I just don't think Wisconsin has the capacity to blow out Marquette.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much all of Wisconsin's games have been in the 60s, so that, you know, they like to play slow. That's their style, and it worked well for them in Maui, Vegas. You got to give them that. They did win the Maui Invitational, which was held in Las Vegas this year. They beat our old friend Buzz Williams in Texas A&M. They beat Kelvin Sampson in Houston, a Final Four team last year, and then they beat St. Mary's in the final. So they've gotten the buzz that comes from winning the Maui. Maybe it wasn't the most hyped Maui Invitational this year because it wasn't actually in Maui.
Right.
It wasn't like the star-studded. Like, normally there's always like a top 2 or 3 team in Maui. Like, almost always, there's always a Duke or Kentucky or Kansas or, you know, Gonzaga in Maui. There wasn't one this year. But they did win it, and so they are riding high right now. And obviously, the big problem that Marquette's going to have to deal with is going to be Johnny Davis, who in the very early KenPom Player of the Year rankings is number 8. I mean, he has been outstanding. He was huge in the Maui Invitational. He is averaging, what is it, 20 points a game right now for a team that only scores in the 60s?
Yep.
I mean, look, if Marquette loses this game, it's going to be because Johnny Davis got his.
Right.
He's averaging 20 points, 5.6 rebounds, 2.2 assists, two steals a game. He's shooting 36% from three. So, you know, this is a guy who is stepping into a role because Wisconsin lost six seniors from a year ago. So this is a guy who probably he didn't really play much last year, didn't get a whole lot of run, but he is making the most out of his opportunity, and, you know, he'll be a problem. And so I would assume that is Daryl Morcell's man. On
Saturday. I would agree. Yeah, it's going to be Daryl Morcell and or, oh, boy, when Daryl's on the bench, I don't know. I think Shaka's going to go for max minutes for Morcell. So I think the only time Morcell goes to the bench is probably when Johnny Davis goes to the bench, and, you know, unless there's foul trouble or something like that.
Right.
So I don't even know who the secondary or the second defender would be. Maybe Greg Elliott, or I don't think it'd be Tyler Kolek. So it'll be interesting to see, and that's was always certainly always one of the risks when you play a Wisconsin team, is they like to get other teams in foul trouble, and, you know, playing in the coal hole, there's some history of shall we say helpful collaboration in that regard in terms of getting fouls called on the opposing teams. But that'll be the interesting matchup, is the Daryl Morcell defensively against Johnny Davis, because if you can quiet Davis, and by quiet I mean 12 points or less,
right.
I don't think Wisconsin has much offense other places.
You know, I was actually surprised, you know, I guess this is a stereotype type thing, but when I think of Wisconsin, I think of just usually just a bunch of white guys who shoot the ball.
Right.
But Wisconsin is actually a worse 3-point shooting team than Marquette right now.
Cool.
They're shooting 28.8% from three compared to Marquette's 32%. Neither of those numbers are great, but Wisconsin's actually worse. Now, as I mentioned, Davis is their best 3-point shooter, at least by total volume or by number of threes made. He's 36% from the floor. Lauren Bowman is their best percentage wise. He's 6 of 10 coming off the bench. But yeah, this is not a team, at least statistically so far this year, a team that's going to be bombs away from three. You know, I say that, and they could catch fire and shoot 50% on 30 attempts on Saturday. But
right.
I don't expect Wisconsin to just bomb away from three. This is a team that you know, they play slow. They're going to get good shots, try to get guys in the lane, try to get open looks for Johnny Davis, whether he's shooting from the perimeter or trying to get into the paint.
Well, I mean, even from the offensive end, stylistically, to your point, it's different than some of the Wisconsins in the past, in that 72% of their offense comes from inside the arc or from free throws, right? So that's where their points are coming from. So they're not only are they not hitting a lot of threes, they're not taking a ton of them either. So it's going to be interesting to see, with Marquette's quickness and its full court pressure. I'm sure Wisconsin will be able to handle the full court pressure. Like, I'm not expecting Wisconsin's going to turn it over 60 times or, you know, some insane number.
Right.
They might turn it over a little bit more.
They're better than the Bonnies as far as taking care of the ball.
Right.
They're 15th in the country in turnover percentage on offense. So it's going to be tough to turn them over. Marquette really struggled to turn St. Bonaventure over, and I expect a similar struggle against Wisconsin.
Correct. And so what's going to be interesting is that half court defense, and, you know, will Marquette play disciplined, watch the back cuts. The Crowley Kerr-Quoth matchup in the post will be very interesting, right? So I think it's going to be an interesting style matchup. I don't think Wisconsin has the guns to blow Marquette out, but, you know, certainly Wisconsin should be respected in the, you know, literal basketball playing sense in terms of their ability to win. They could win. I mean, we don't have to respect them as a people or as an organization, but from a basketball standpoint, they certainly have the ability to kind of take Marquette's strengths and flip them on their heads and come away with a victory in Madison.
Top 10 defense on KenPom is Wisconsin. They're 7th in the country as we record this on Sunday. Offense is 75th by comparison. Marquette is 105 on offense compared to Wisconsin's 75, and 62 on defense compared to Wisconsin's 7. So statistically, you see why this is a big advantage to Wisconsin. Wisconsin actually has a game before Marquette, though. They play on the road against Georgia Tech on Wednesday. That's a strange matchup. Is that Big Ten ACC challenge?
It's got to be, right?
Yeah, I would think so. That's just kind of a random.
Well, I mean, that's a benefit in, you know, Marquette's favor, right? You know, Wisconsin was in Las Vegas for, you know, a week or whatever, comes back, then has to go on the road down to Georgia, and then comes back and has to play Marquette, you know, 3 days later or whatever. So it's the right time and the right schedule combination for Marquette to come away with the victory.
If you want to spin it that way, I'll buy that. I'll buy anything you want to sell me as far as a Marquette advantage in this game. If Marquette's going to win the game, Phil, what has to happen in your mind?
Well, I think Daryl Morcell and Justin Lewis have to stay out of foul trouble, right? Those two, like, for the offense to maximize its potential, those two guys have to be on the court for maximum minutes. And especially with Morcell in his ability to guard, you know, Johnny Davis. Let's not forget that Morcell was the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year last year.
He's played against the Badgers a few times.
Correct.
He's probably never actually gone toe-to-toe with Johnny Davis, but he's played against the Badgers a number of times.
Correct. So I think that's, for me, that's the key is Morcell and Justin Lewis playing, you know, 35, 36 minutes, staying out of foul trouble, able to guard their men carefully and then be functional and available on the offensive end. That's the key to me. What's your key? If Marquette's going to win, what's the big thing that has to happen?
I think you touched on a lot of it there. Yeah, you got to. It's tough to speed up a team that plays like Wisconsin does because, you know, they struggle to do it against the Bonnies. And I keep going back to that game because they're just kind of parallels here, as far as stylistically. Wisconsin's a very young team, as opposed to the Bonaventure's experience. So maybe
except for Brad Davidson, who's been there for like 37 years.
Yes, he is a super senior for sure. I think Alan Bukowski pointed out he is like the potential to be the first Badger in like 40 years to potentially lose to Marquette four times. That's one thing Tom. I almost said Tom Crean. That's one thing Wojo did well. I have to say he's probably one of the least successful coaches in the last 50 years for Marquette. But he went 4-3 against Wisconsin, including three out of his last four. So. Recent success has actually been pretty good to Marquette in this rivalry, but this could be Davis's fourth loss to Marquette if Marquette's able to win this game. But
you hate to see it, but more importantly, you love to see it.
We would love to see it. But yeah, back to your question. Yeah, I think the matchup of I think you hit it on the head with Morcell's got to stay out of foul trouble because what you don't want is, you know. You get a couple charge calls and Morcell's out of the game early on, and then maybe you have an inexperienced player guarding Davis and he goes off early and the game gets out of hand before you can even, you know, get comfortable on the, you know, in your seat.
It's right. Crap.
We're already getting blown out in this game. So, yeah, if you're the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, and he is, it's time to bring that to Madison, and I think he will. Marcel's been good defensively in every game, really.
Right.
Maybe, I mean, the whole team's struggling in the half court, certainly at times this year, but you know Morcell knows what he's doing out there, and if you're going to challenge him in practice, we talked a few weeks about Shaka's metric about being in the gold and being in the red, and you look at Morcell say, we need you to be in the gold this game, and now that may be tough when you're guarding the other team's leading scorer, but still, it's a goal, and I think Morcell will be up for that challenge. Say, look, you got to stop their number one guy. Morcell's probably going to say, bring it on. That's me. I'll do that.
Right.
So his defensive effort is going to be key. And I think Quest's defensive effort is going to be good. Because like you said, Phil, this is not a team that's going to be hopefully not going to be blowing Marquette out from three. They're going to try to get easy shots and, pass the ball well and get guys cut into the basket and try to get layups. And if Quest is doing what he has done so many times this year and altering shots in the paint, that could throw Marquette off. So I think the defensive efforts of Morcell and Queth both have to be outstanding, but the entire team has to be good in the half court. And I think that's where Marquette has gotten eaten alive sometimes this year, particularly in the stretches when they have been trailing in games, or, you know, when they got blown out by the Bonnies, is just not executing in the half court, losing their man on defense, guys cutting to the basket, you know, losing assignments. Can't happen against Wisconsin, because
right.
they'll pick you apart, and you know, they'll get up 10 points before you can blink if you're not going to get, you know, if you're going to lose your assignments on defense. So the half court defense has to be better than what it's been so far this year if you're going to beat Wisconsin.
Right, absolutely. Well, and keep in mind, this is the by far the most hostile environment Marquette will have faced so far this season. Obviously, you know,
first
we all
road game.
Yeah, first true road game, obviously a bit of an unfriendly presence in the St. Bonaventure game and West Virginia, et cetera, in the Charleston Classic, but nothing like going into Madison. And, you know, and I do not care what any Wisconsin fan says about, oh, you know, Marquette's not a rival, da 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 da. That's full BS. Just look at the way they react when Marquette comes into the Kohl's Center and how much they get up for it and care. So that's going to be a wild environment for a very young team to be in, right? So like if I'm gonna find all sorts of, you know, nitpicky things to say, oh well, they're going to be coming from the Eastern time zone at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday night and come back, that gives Marquette advantage. Playing at home in Madison against a team that has 10 freshmen, that's a big freaking advantage for Wisconsin. And that's something the team's really going to have to be mindful of, right? Daryl Morcell has played in the Kohl's Center in competitive games when they mattered. So hopefully some of that leadership and knowledge he can pass along. But even somebody like Justin Lewis, noted Badger killer, he did it one time in an empty Fiserv Arena, right, last year during the heart of the pandemic, right? So like
Justin Lewis is 1-0 against Wisconsin with one memorable moment. So
right.
Hopefully that record continues.
Right. But there's nothing that says, you know, that you know, it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is this is a very decided advantage for Madison to get this game in, you know, at home this year, right? With both teams being young, it certainly helps. It certainly helps to be the home team this year.
It absolutely does. And this is, I mean, far and away. Yeah, it is. I mean, this is their biggest home game of the year since fans have been back. I mean, they hosted Providence earlier this year. They lost that game. But yeah, their only other home games this year have been St. Francis of New York and then Green Bay. So, I mean, this is going to be the first game where the Kohl's Center is truly rocking and jam-packed with fans. There won't be an empty seat in the house. It'll be red everywhere. Yeah, it'll be tough. And this, you know, it'll probably be some deer in headlights looks on some of Marquette's young players. And they're going to need to calm down really quickly. And I think that's a time when you look to your seniors. You look to your leaders. You look to Morcell, Aquith, and even Greg Elliott, who's not technically a senior, even though it feels like he is. You look to those experienced guys who to calm you down and say, look, guys, just shut out the noise. We got to play our game here because this is a good team that wants to beat us, and they're red hot right now. So they'll be playing with a lot of confidence coming off the Maui win. That said, they may go lose to Georgia Tech and come in pissed off and focused. So.
I
hope they get a big win in Atlanta and come in with big egos is, I guess, what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, that's probably the best. You know, you don't want them to be facing two losses in a row, right? You'd rather them be rather full of themselves after going four straight and winning the Maui and winning at Georgia Tech and kind of take them by surprise. But I'll take a win by any means possible.
Yep. Even if you got to win, you know, 44-43.
Yeah, I don't care.
Whatever you got to do, man. This is it's a big win. Obviously, it's big because it's a rivalry. It's big. It's big for recruiting, and it's big because this team is thinking about the tournament right now. Again, they're not a lock for it, and we're not expecting it, but you win this game, and suddenly that resume is looking pretty nice, right? Lots of work to do. I mean, 3 months of work to do still, but you get this win on the road against a Wisconsin team. It's probably going to age well. No matter what you think of Wisconsin, they're always kind of in the mix in the Big Ten at the end of the year. You know, they'll probably be in the top five in the Big Ten at some point. I think Purdue has kind of separated itself from the pack in the Big Ten, but they're going to be there, love them or hate them. I don't think this is a team that's going to finish in the bottom half of the Big Ten. They're going to be up there.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can't sleep on this team. We, you know, may look at it on paper and say, oh, you know, they're beatable or whatever, and maybe they are. But you know, this is a Wisconsin team that's going to be a very interesting matchup for Marquette, and the majority of the intangibles lean, you know, Wisconsin's way. So it's going to be an uphill battle for Marquette for sure.
The important question, Phil: do they win?
Of course they do. Marquette is absolutely going to win this game. 100%. You can count it.
I wouldn't do this podcast if I don't think Marquette's going to win this game. I want to see, like, everything Shock has been building, you know, for the last few weeks, just kind of all come out and just kind of play that perfect game. Even if it means you get down, if you have to get down 12 to do it, then that's what you got to do, because that's what Marquette tends to do in their biggest games.
Right.
They got to get down 12 first, and then they got to come storming back. But, I certainly athletically, I think there's an advantage on Marquette's side, and Marquette has the guy who can slow down a guy who's been red hot in Johnny Davis. You know, if Marquette has the right guy at the right position for that, it matches up well. And I'm not saying you got to shut him out. You just can't let him go off for 20, 25 points.
Right.
And if that's what you're asking Morcell to do, I think he's up for that. And you just gotta get points somewhere, man. You just gotta hope the shots fall, or something happens with Marquette. You know, you'd love to be able to turn them over and get fast break points, but that's probably asking a lot. So you're probably asking Marquette to at least overachieve a little bit shooting the three. And is that asking too much? Maybe. But gotta do what you gotta do.
And who knows? Maybe for Wisconsin, there'll be some regression to the mean for their three-point shooting, because, as you noted, it was lower than Marquette's right now. It's potential that Marquette, I mean, again, schedule-wise, it favors Marquette in terms of the way the warm-ups and the teams you're playing against, and you kind of want to bank this one, right? Wisconsin's going to be good, so if you can win on the road against Wisconsin, that's probably a Q1 win, right? And so even if you lose the next five or six in a row after that, you know, you're accumulating Q1 wins, and the next five or six losses are all Q1 losses, which don't hurt you that much at tournament time. And again, we're not adjusting expectations to say, hey, we should be in the tournament. But if you want to make that expectation a if you want to start to get to where that's an expectation, it starts with winning on the road at Wisconsin, which is I'm not saying it's an easy win, but it's a gettable game, right? Wisconsin is defeatable, and Marquette's got the ability to do that. And in this case, you know, because I'm optimistic Phil and fully out of the cage, I think they do.
Yeah, I'm drinking your Kool-Aid, man. I'm just feeling. I hope I'm right about this, but I would absolutely love to see it. And yeah, like if the spread is 9, as Ken Pom is suggesting, yeah, I'll take Marquette +9, and I'll sprinkle a little on the money line too. Just take Marquette to win outright, because that'd be a sweet payout if you take a 9-point dog to win. They win outright, but
yeah, absolutely,
I'll take it. I hope, but I would hope that the luck in that regard goes better than the predictions on the take my money has gone this year.
I was going to ask you, that didn't go well with Northern Illinois.
Yeah. It looked like I was following the game on my phone because I was working, but I checked a few times during the night. I said, hey, they're 40%. I think it should be good. That's because if you missed it last time, I set the take my money line for the previous game at just a modest 32% from three, and they must have like missed their last four or five shots from three of the game or something, because that 40% dropped to 30% by the time the game was over. So, didn't get it. And so we keep this gimmick going of if Marquette wins, take my money does not hit. And when Marquette loses, take my money hits. So, you know, coming into the season, I would have thought there would have been a few games like the Wisconsin game where I set the take my money as just win. But now it's got to become this kind of gimmick, Phil, where I almost want to keep it going that, it, like, I'll never get it when Marquette wins. And then, like, we'll, like, by the end of the year, the record on take my money will be the exact opposite of whatever Marquette's record is. So I
could be fun.
I have to keep doing I think I have to keep doing that and keep setting it that way. So shall we talk through and figure out some take my monies for this week?
I think we should.
So I'm going to – what for Jackson State, you know, I think something they do pretty well in these bye games is hit that mark of 32 deflections. So I think I might just keep it simple and go with that. I think they'll play it a good – well, the thing is Jackson State does actually play kind of slow now that I look at it, but – they do turn it over a fair amount, so I think you could hit that 32 deflections in that game. So how do you feel about that one?
I think that's the problem, right? They're likely to beat Jackson State, and they are also likely to get 32. So if you're paying out on a game win, it's kind of defying the spirit of the event so far.
Well, I mean, I'd like to get to a point where both things happen. Like,
okay, you hit take. It's got to start somewhere,
like,
right?
Yeah, like, yeah, like that's kind of the point of the whole thing. Because I guess when I kind of came up with the concept, I was expecting Marquette to be bad this year, and I wanted something like a little side bet to keep these games interesting. But now they're actually winning games, and so like it's kind of defeated the purpose. But I started the bet, so I'm just going to run it out and see how it goes this year. Even if we end up paying it out five times, oh well. But yeah, so I don't think I'm going to do like make take my money just win yet until that actually starts happening where both things happen, that the take my money bet hits and also the and Marquette wins the game. So I'm going to set 32 deflections for the Jackson State game. Now, the Dirty Badgers, Phil.
Mm.
What should be, you know, this is obviously a superior team statistically.
Yeah.
A team that plays slowly. A team that very rarely turns it over. Team that's tough defensively. Team does not shoot well from three. Team that defends the paint pretty well. Scanning the numbers here, what do you like for maybe a goal for Marquette to try to hit? See, the thing is, when I came up with the concept, the idea with these things I said is, like, if they hit it, it would make winning easier. Like, it would be a positive towards the goal of winning the game. Things like shooting better than 32% from three, or turning the team over a certain number of times, or winning this number of offensive rebounds, or whatever the stupid other ones that I've lost this year have been. But
I don't know. My eye goes to, like, I want to say turnover percentage, right? Like, so their turnover percentage is 13.8%, which is, like you said, 15th in the country on KenPom. What if we said, I mean, because I think you're going to have to turn over Wisconsin a little bit more than they normally would for Marquette to have a chance, right? Like, it's just Wisconsin cannot protect the ball at the same rate they currently are, make the shots they currently are, and you expect Marquette's offense to take up the slack, right? So I don't know, what, 15% turnover percent in this game?
I mean, that would certainly be worse than what Wisconsin is doing. Now, Marquette's defense is turning opponents over at 21% for the year, which is, I mean, you do that in Wisconsin game, you're winning.
Right, like, absolutely, 100%.
But that number seems high. So, let's do that. Let's do 15% turnover percentage. And I'm going to have to rely on KenPom for the number because I'm definitely not going to track that during the game.
Yeah.
We may not know if it hits until like a half hour after the game because I'm definitely not going to do the math. But maybe one of you out there who is uber stat nerd and wants to calculate it for me, you go right ahead, and I would appreciate it. So, those are the take my monies for this week, both defensive oriented, which we love to see on Shaka teams. So hit the 32 deflections. That should be easy to track because they're playing at home and they have the...
They have it on the board now. They track it.
Yeah, they have
it's
it on
great.
The board now, and there's an assistant who has it on a whiteboard. So that'll be the goal for Jackson State, and then take my money against Wisconsin. Hey, I'd love to just say just win, but again, I have to keep the gimmick going where the two are not necessarily hand-in-hand, so we'll set it at turn Wisconsin over at 15% of the time.
And I like it.
You do that, it's going to help you win. Probably not, might not be a lock. I mean, that's certainly a thing that could – you turn them over at 15% of the time and still lose.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly could go that way, but
I mean, yeah, I mean, because 15% isn't like a ton of extra turnovers, but why it's A, achievable, and B, helpful for the victory is, you know, Wisconsin's offense is entirely predicated on I every possession I get, I score some sort of points out of it, right? And if you turn them over more than usual, then their pace doesn't allow them to generate more possessions than they normally would, right? Yeah. So, you know, and I also think, and this is where we're going to end up in a rock fight with them, right? Marquette's offense is not nearly sophisticated enough, you know, unless we're getting out and running a lot, which we honestly don't do a lot of, right? Like, our transition offense is, I don't want to say it's non-existent, but it's there's not a lot of it there.
For a team that presses as much as Marquette does, you would think they would have more transition buckets.
Exactly. And so, you know, Wisconsin's disciplined. They'll get back on D. So Marquette's going to be playing against a lot of half-court defense. So I think we'll also slow down some as a result, right? We'll kind of lower ourselves to their level. So it's going to be, you know, possessions are going to be at a premium. So if we can turn them over a couple of extra times, that's, you know, a couple of possessions they're not scoring, A, and B, a couple of possessions we are potentially scoring, and that could make all the difference, right? Like if Wisconsin, you know, turns it over the same or less than they have on the season on average, I think Marquette loses.
Mm-hmm. I think so. But we're not going to buy into that because we're going to say
Marquette. They're going to win.
Because we said so. That's why, damn it.
I'm wishing this into existence. It's happening.
I like it. Anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
No, I think we've surprisingly talked more than enough. We thought it was going to be a quick podcast, and we droned on for a bit. So I'm good with where we're at.
All right, very good. Well, you know, be sure to hit us up on Twitter, everybody. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave comments on cracksidewalks.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page if that is your thing. Phil, let's hopefully get 2 wins this week, and the next week's hot podcast will be a very, very happy podcast.
Absolutely, and just enjoy the hell out of Badger Hate Week.
Let the hate flow through you. Seashells and balloons, everybody.